Well, as we conclude here in Ecclesiastes, it's the 12th chapter of the same thing. And so if you ever struggle sometimes, when we sing songs that repeat a lot, just be reminded that Solomon said the same thing for 12 straight chapters. Same thing. And so let me remind you of that this morning. Ecclesiastes chapter 12, verse 8. Vanity of vanities, says the preacher. All is vanity. It's how he began the book, and it's how he's ending the book. Vanity of vanities, says the preacher. All is vanity. And then, besides being wise, the preacher also taught the people knowledge, weighing and studying and arranging many proverbs with great care. The preacher sought to find words of delight, and uprightly he wrote words of truth. The words of the wise are like goads, and like nails firmly fixed are the collected sayings. They are given by one shepherd. Verse 12, my son, beware of anything beyond these. Of making many books, there is no end, and much study is a weariness of the flesh. The end of the matter, all has been heard. Fear God and keep his commandments, for this is the whole duty of man. For God will bring every deed into judgment with every secret thing, whether good or evil. As we wrap this up, just a quick reminder. Life is uncertain and unpredictable, so please get used to it. Life is uncertain and unpredictable. Vanity of vanities, says the preacher, all is vanity. Life is uncertain and unpredictable, so get used to it. And I would add, and stop getting mad about it. Like, quit getting mad about it. Like, it doesn't help you. It's of no use. Like getting mad about how crazy and unpredictable and strange and weird and broken our world is, it is not helpful. Just understand that that's a reality. Understand that life is pretty chaotic, and life apart from God is meaningless. And it's even more unpredictable and uncertain. And so as Solomon concludes this whole all this writing about wisdom and understanding, he comes back to the same conclusion that there's a lot of sort of uselessness in the world. It reminds me of a little girl in a field chasing a butterfly. And if you kind of picture that scene in your mind, at first the little girl's having fun, right? That butterfly's cute and pretty, and so she's chasing it. She wants to catch it to have it as a pet, hopefully not to crush it. Which is probably what she would do if she caught it, but she's excited and fun for a few minutes, and then she gets tired, because as fast as she wants to be, she is not as fast as the butterfly. And so she just plops down on the grass, sort of gives up, until that butterfly sort of gets close to her again and she has a renewed sense of energy. Oh, okay, maybe now's the time. And she kind of tries again, but this time she doesn't last as long and it's like starts to get frustrated. And now she's thirsty. She needs her Capri Sun. And so she runs over to mom and is distracted by the beauty and the joy of Capri Sun. And she's forgotten about the butterfly for a moment until maybe it reappears. But then by that point, she's just frustrated and like, forget it. She just sort of gives up. It's a beautiful picture of the fleeting nature of this life and all sort of the worldly pleasures. Beauty to this statement. Because even though called. Some practical living. He's like, look, I know I have some wisdom, but I'm not just keeping it for myself. I've gathered, collected, studied. I've put some effort into this so that you, my people, will also be encouraged. And so it's a great little reminder to us that all of our knowledge and wisdom shouldn't be hoarded. We need to give our lives away to others, to help others. We need to help others along the way. And then he uses these two kind of agricultural metaphors because he's their teacher, and as their teacher, he goads them. A goad is a sharp stick used for animals to poke and prod them. We use it today when we usually want our friend to do something that's stupid. We goad them into dancing on the internet, right? So that's what we're getting at here. You goad them. Like, I've pushed you. Again, if you don't get that, praise God. You're going to push them. I'm goading someone. I'm pushing them to live the right kind of way. He's like, my goal is to help you live rightly and to teach you the things that really matter so that you'll be secure like a nail firmly fixed to hold something strong and secure. It's fixed, it's secure, but let me tell you again, it's not me, Solomon, the wise one. There's only one place, really, where real wisdom comes from. That's from the shepherd, from God himself, from the capital S shepherd, the one who is right and true. Because the source of wisdom is the shepherd. The source of wisdom is our heavenly Father. Earthly wisdom is good, but heavenly wisdom is perfect. And Solomon wants to help his people. He wants to help those that would come after him to know more rightly how to live life. But he also knows that there's one above him that shares perfect wisdom, all goodness. Earthly knowledge and wisdom are good, but the Lord himself is the source of eternal truth. Truth. All truth is God's truth. He is the source of truth. He said, the problem that we have sometimes is that we get sidetracked into thinking that our wisdom and our knowledge and our understanding actually will help us get down the road further. And that's what he warns against. He says, hey, beware. Watch out for gaining a bunch of knowledge and just volumes and volumes and volumes of books. Like, just continuing to add to your knowledge isn't always the best thing. Sometimes it's just the simple wisdom of the Lord. Because he's warning against those who study all the time but never learn. They know all the facts, but they really haven't learned anything. They know everything, but they live for nothing. And that's what he's warning against. Because that warning oftentimes is because the more we get, the more confused we become, the more complex life is. And he's helping the people of Israel. He's helping us to boil it all down to something very, very simple. The wisdom from the Lord is the best thing. Wisdom from the Lord is the right thing. If I want to know what the Lord is like, then I'm going to look at his word. If I want to understand the wisdom of God, I need to look at the book of God. I need to dive into that. Because the last lines of this book, in a very straightforward way, call us to a very simple task. Fear God and keep his commandments, for this is the whole duty of man, verse 13 says. Life is simple. We make it complex. Life is simple. Fear God and keep his commandments. To obey God is really like the one human thing. Like, that's the truly human idea, is that we would obey God. We have been uniquely created to have a relationship with God. No other creation has that. We are uniquely created to have a relationship with God. And so throughout this book, he has investigated over and over and over again sort of the role of humanity, Adam, the word we get Adam from, for humans. Like, what is our role as humans? Well, our role is unique in this creation. We're to have a relationship with God, to fear him, to have an awe and wonder for the person, for God himself, to be dependent on God. And the problem is, you and I, instead of following that, instead of leaning into our dependence and our trust and our relationship with God, what do? We tried to become like God. That's what Adam and Eve did, and we still do that today. Try to become like God. And that was our downfall. We wanted to be like God instead of trust God. And so we lost the one thing that we had, right? The relationship with God. Enter meaningless and vanity. And so he spends this entire book sort of exposing our frailty, our dilemma of, instead of trusting God and leaning into his wisdom, pursuing our own knowledge and understanding and making ourselves like God. And in the end, he said, all of that is meaningless. And so now, what happens? You might conclude that I've tried to become like God. I've pursued wisdom and understanding and knowledge, and everything is meaningless. So let's just throw our hands up and say, forget all of it. I'll just walk away. And there are lots of people in our world who have chosen that. They just reject anything that has to do with spiritual matters. They just reject, called nihilism, right? It's a rejection of all things related to God, religion, faith. It's just a rejection of that. Like, that's all meaningless. I'm just going to go over here and trust in myself. You have others who just kind of escape and say, I'm just going to bury my head in the sand. There are others that, in all of this, like, life is just terrible, right? Unpredictable, uncertain. I can't stand it anymore, so I'm just going to walk away. They just are despair. They just sort of give up. But Solomon, at the end, when he realizes that sort of life is unpredictable, life is challenging, life is hard and meaningless in many ways, does it say, well, I'm just going to give up? No, what he does is he leans into God even more. He leans into the wonder and the mighty power of God. He leans in because he recognizes, I don't have the capacity to predict what's going to happen in 2 seconds. I don't have the capacity to map out my life perfectly and know exactly what's coming, when it's coming, and how it's coming, and where I'm going to go. I don't have that capacity. And so why would I trust in myself? No. He takes this idea of meaninglessness of life and then leans more heavily into the majesty and the wonder of God, the one who is in control of all things, the one who we can trust in all matters, the one who does hear our prayers. Very rarely do I speak into the songs that we sing, but today I did. I asked Joey to sing that last song, I Trust in God. Because that line in there, I sought the Lord, and he heard, and he answered, is a beautiful line, and it gets loud in here when we sing it. It's loud. Because on Sunday morning at 11:32, it's loud. But on Monday night at 10:30, when there's been chaos in your world, is it still true? That's what Solomon is getting at. I sought the Lord, and he heard, and he answered. The struggle for us sometimes is that we don't lean into the Lord the way we should because he doesn't answer the way we want him to. And sometimes the answer is no. And yet Solomon, as he declares life is vanity, he concludes after all of this that even though this world is full of meaninglessness, I have one simple responsibility. Fear God. Keep his commandments. Lean in to the mighty one. Lean in to my trust and my obedience. Lean into my relationship with the Lord. And we would say that in the New Testament, right? Solomon didn't have the benefit of seeing Jesus in person, but in the New Testament, we would say, keep his commandments. We would say that differently, actually. Because there's one commandment that matters more than any. Love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength. That's the number one commandment. We might call that faith. It's not a check the box. No, it's a relationship. That's what keep the commandments. I'm going to have a relationship with God, and I'm going to love him with all my heart, soul, mind, and strength. And then, oh, by the way, I'm going to love my neighbor as myself. That's the second command. Because the righteous, the just, they live by faith. That's what Solomon is getting at. We have one simple responsibility. Fear God, keep his commandments, live by faith. Lean into your relationship with God. Don't out of despair or frustration or pleasure, distraction, reject him. Lean in to him. The just shall live by faith. Romans chapter 1, Galatians chapter 3, Hebrews chapter 10 speak to this very thing that Solomon is speaking about. And so my question for us today is, how are you living? And if you were a young adult in the late 90s, you would say, in living color. But how are you living? Are you living by faith? Are you living by faith? Because God will bring every deed into judgment, every secret thing, whether good or evil. Again.